Morning. Isn't it great to be in church? Thank you for that response over there. That was wonderful. It's great to be here. And if we haven't met before, my name's Mark. And my wife and I, Karen, are loving being a part of Inglewood Community Church. And it's great to be able to speak here today. Mark, your pastor, senior pastor, my senior pastor, is in the US at the moment in Chicago. And he's with a group of 10 other pastors. My wife and Karen is there as well, and they're helping leading a team who've been doing a leadership intensive at Willow Creek Community Church. And they'll be back this week. And Melinda, I know you're missing Mark. And I'm missing Karen too, don't worry. So they'll be back, I think, Wednesday. Is that right? Wednesdays. So it's Sunday and Wednesdays are coming. Okay, so anyway, it's great to be here. And look, everybody's welcome at this church. I love that about Inglewood. And want you to feel very comfortable. We're coming into this season of leading up to Christmas. We're in December. And you would have seen the theme is about wonder. So I want to talk to you today a little bit about the wonder of compassion. But so some of you who were blessed enough to be able to experience having a baby, and whether as a lady giving birth or as a husband and father on that other side of it. Isn't it amazing? Think back. I was thinking about this during the week, and I was thinking about when we got two kids. Our son's 29 now and our daughter's 25. And I remember when Daniel was born and just the emotion of that. Remember that? Think back if you've experienced that. If you haven't, I'm sure that'll hopefully come one day. And anyway, what happened is Karen had, without going into details or anything like that, she'd kill me if I said that now, actually. It was a difficult birth, so I'll just say that. Anyway, I got the privilege to hold Daniel, our little son, for probably quite some time after the birth, and he was crying and crying and crying, and I get to hold him, and he fell asleep in my arms. And this is 20-something years ago, and I'm still feeling it. It's amazing. And anyway, I'm holding this little newborn baby who's helpless, and they said to me, because he's asleep in your arms, because apparently when you go back to the room, you can't carry the newborn baby. They have to go into the bassinet trolley thing and they get taken. But they said at St. John of God, Subiaco, we'll let you do it as long as you don't trip over. And I didn't trip over. And I had that privilege of just holding Daniel as a young born baby for, you know, an hour or more, which was really special. And I thought about that and I thought, and I had the same experience with our daughter as well. Just amazing. But, you know, there's a story in the Old Testament about the Jewish nation. And they were in captivity as slaves in Egypt. And in this situation, the Israelites, the Jewish people, were growing in incredible numbers. And Pharaoh, at this point, came and he said to the midwives who were a part of helping the Jewish women in their childbirth, he called them in and he said this to them. Because the Israelites are growing in so much numbers, so many numbers, we're finding it hard to control them. We want you, if a baby girl's born, you can let it live. If a son is born, you kill the son. Can you imagine that? At birth. For the mother, for the midwives, if you're a midwife, you just, you know, I mean, it'd break your heart. Now, what happened, the midwives actually didn't even listen to what they had to say. And they continued to, you know, have, you know, baby boys being born. So Pharaoh calls them back in. He says, what's going on? I told you, if there's a boy that's born, you need to kill the boy. If it's a girl, let it live. And they said this. They said, well, the women of the Jewish Israelite people, women, they give birth really quickly compared to the Egyptians. They're really smooth and quick in their births, and by the time we get there, they've already had the baby. Now, if you think about that, that actually is not quite true, probably. So here's a sermon for Mark to preach on. That's Pastor Mark. When is it right to tell a little lie? Okay, that's another whole, don't even go there. Okay, I know there's a commandment about that, but you can pass on to Mark. He can preach on that in a few weeks' time, next year or something. Okay, so, but here's the reason, is that what happened is they said that, and then God, and you can read it in Exodus chapter 1, God blesses them and thanks them for it, and they eventually have children of their own. So in this context, Pharaoh goes, okay, I've had enough of this. And he says, if it's a boy that's born, the Jewish women, you have to throw your son into the River Nile. Imagine that. And so that's the context of this little reading I'm going to read to you out of Exodus chapter 2, starting from verse 1. Okay? That's the context as you come into it. And it says this in Exodus chapter 2 and verse 1. About this time, a man and a woman from the tribe of Levi got married. So they're one of the tribes in the Jewish or Israelite nation who were in captivity in Egypt. And the woman became pregnant and gave birth to a son. And she saw that he was a special baby. And she kept him hidden for 3 months. So she didn't obey. She kept him hidden for 3 months. But when she could hide him no longer, she got a basket and it was made of papyrus reeds. She waterproofed it with tar and pitch and she placed the baby in a basket along the banks and put it into the River Nile. Now, you've got to understand, at that time, probably if you've seen that movie that came out years ago, the cartoon, the animation of Prince of Egypt, you would see in that all these different floating babies in these baskets going down the river. And that was probably what was happening. So this is not unusual, unfortunately, at that time. Now, here's the thing. So the baby's in the basket. It's floating down the River Nile. But he's got a sister. And the sister's a bit older. And the sister's walking by. And the sister is looking and just, she's obviously really feeling it for her brother, who's been only about 3 months old. And it says this in verse 4, and the baby's sister stood at a distance, watching to see what would happen. Wow. Soon Pharaoh's daughter came down to bathe in the river, and her attendants walked along the riverbank. When the princess saw the basket among the reeds, she sent her maid to go and get it. And when the princess opened it, she saw the baby, and the little boy was crying, and she felt sorry for him. And in actually the New King James Version, a lot of others said she felt compassion for that boy. And she said this, this must be one of the Hebrew children. And then, get this, she says to the baby, so the baby's sister, who's approaching the princess, she says to the sister, this is amazing, and the sister goes, should I go and get one of the Hebrew women to look after this baby for you? And the princess goes, yes, do it. And so she went and got who? Who knows the story? She got the mother. How amazing is that? And this baby, so and she says, take the baby and nurse him for me. The princess told this baby's mother. And get this, how cool is this? And I will pay you. How about that? And I will pay you for you to help bring up this little boy. And so the woman, the mother, nursed the little baby, took him home. And then in verse 18 it says, later when the boy grew older, his mother brought him back to the Pharaoh's daughter, who adopted him as her own son. And the princess named him who? Moses. And she exclaimed, because I lifted him out of the water. Isn't that an amazing story? So the context of me telling you that is this. How different the story of Moses and the release of slavery of a whole nation out of Egypt, How different the story would have been if it was not for the compassion of the princess. Just think about that. See, her compassion triggered the events because Moses, you know the story, grew in the palace. God used him. And then, you know, obviously the whole thing about let my people go and he led the people out, you know the story. That wouldn't have happened. God used that princess to trigger the events that led to a whole nation getting set free. So just think about that for a moment. Your compassion, the wonder of compassion, your compassion to someone who is a chaplain in a school, your compassion, I met Les today, who's the president of AA, is that right, Les? Your compassion today, and you shared your story in communion today, can make the difference in people's lives. And who knows what God can do through your compassion. Amen? It's got incredible potential. Compassion is the force that will move us to share the good news of Jesus Christ at this Christmas. Now, Jesus has some stuff to say about this. In Matthew chapter 9, verse 36 and 38, Jesus says these words. When he saw the crowds, he had what on them? Compassion. Thank you. He had compassion on them because they were confused and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples who were with him, the harvest is great, but the workers are few. So pray to the Lord who's in charge of the harvest and ask him to send more workers into the field. See, he saw, he felt, and then he was moved to action. There's a big difference between compassion and sentiment. See, compassion leads to action where sentiment just leads to soothing. And many people today, unfortunately, are much more into being soothed than being moved. We need compassion that moves just like the princess in the story of Moses. We need that kind of compassion. See, I say this to myself as I say it to you. You know, until you and I are moved with the same compassion that moved the Lord Jesus Christ, people will continue to be weary and scattered like sheep without a shepherd. Until you and I have the same compassion and mercy, the harvest will continue to go unharvested. Jesus says go, he says give, he says deliver the message, but we won't go, we won't give because we don't care. And that's a problem. Lack of compassion. Caring moves us to go and to give so that others can live. You know, Jesus tells another story. He tells the story, which you know really well, I'm sure, about the Good Samaritan. You know that story? So let me retell it to you just as a reminder. So what happens is, so Jesus has got this crowd around him and they're listening, and there's people who are trying to trap Jesus, and then there are people who are listening. So, you know, it's a big crowd and he knows what's going on. He tells the story. And every time Jesus told a story, he told it to make a really big point. And he tells this story of a person who's traveling from Jerusalem to Jericho. And as he's traveling along the road, these robbers come and they rob him, they kick him, they beat him. Like there was a big, apparently in the southern suburbs last night, there was a party that went on and there was a, you know, people got injured, you know what I mean? So they were beaten, this guy's on the road, and they've left him, and it says in the word they left this guy half dead. That's a big beating. He's stripped of his clothes, he's been robbed, and he's lying on the ground half dead. Now, Jesus says this in another place. In John chapter 10, verse 10, he says this. He says, the thief, the devil that is, comes to do what? Steal, kill, and destroy. And then Jesus says this. But I have come that you may have life and have it to the full. Have it abundantly. So this guy's lying on the side of the road. And here's the interesting thing. There are people who thought they were really good in the crowd. And Jesus speaks straight to them. So here's what happened. The guy's lying on the side of the road and a priest comes along. And as the priest comes along, he does a glance and he just keeps on walking. I don't want to get involved. That might wreck my convenience where I'm going. Then a temple attendant comes along, or a Levite, in some versions it says, sort of in that same kind of a bracket. He comes along, he kind of walks over, has a little look, goes, I'm out of here, I'm not involved in that. If I get involved with that, I might lose my own convenience. And then, so this priest and this temple assistant, they had a whole lot going for them. They had the calling. They had the anointing. They had the office. They had the ministry. They had the education. They had the blessing, the prosperity, and they had the respect. But here's the deal. None of those things were enough to make a difference in a perishing man's life on the side of a road. And Jesus knew it. That's why he told the story to the crowd. Then Jesus just really switches it up. And it says this, then a despised Samaritan. You need to understand that. The Jewish people despised the Samaritans. And so someone who's like, they just can't hack those people. And they're listening. And he says, then a despised Samaritan comes along. And he goes over. And he has a donkey. And he cares for this guy who's half beaten, lifts him on his donkey, patches up his wounds, does whatever he can. Then he takes him on the road, takes him to an inn, to a place where he can heal up. He pays silver coins to the owner and he says, whatever you can, help this man. And if there's more expense because of this, what I've given you now, these two silver coins isn't enough. If there's more expense, when I come back next time, I'll fix you up for what is owing. Now, just pause there for a sec. Jesus stops the story. And then he says this. Now, which of these three, the priest, the temple attendant or the Levite, or the despised Samaritan, was a neighbor to the guy who was beaten on the side of the road? And they had to reply. They couldn't even say Samaritan. You know how they said it? They said it like this. The one who showed mercy, or the one who showed compassion. And then Jesus says this to everybody who's listening. Go, and you're right, yes. Now go and do likewise. Ooh, that was a bit close. We need to do that. You know, he had compassion, so he went to him. Compassion moved him. He cared. Did it cost him? Yes, it cost him money, time, inconvenience. But saving others is costly. Caring is costly. But I want to tell you today, not caring can be even more costly. My son and his wife last year hiked to base camp in the Himalayan mountains. Anyone been in the Himalayas here? Anybody? Yep, cool. Couple of people at the back there. I've been into Bhutan, and that's near Nepal. And I tell you what, the air's not strong. And, you know, we talk about Bluff Knoll down south being a big mountain. That's like a lump. You know what I mean? That's Mount Bruce, actually, up north near Tom Price's, the largest mountain in Western Australia. That's like nothing. So the Himalayas are massive. There's this story told of Sedar Sundar Singh. Some of you might know this story. He and a companion are walking through the Himalayas, and there's snow and there's ice everywhere, and they're going through the pass. And you can imagine the lack of breath because of oxygen. It's you know, the altitude's high. It's difficult. And as they're walking along, they come across a guy who's in the snow. And he's half frozen. And Singh says to his companion, who he's walking with, we need to help that guy. And the companion says, If we help that guy, we might lose our own life. I'm out of here. I'm caring for myself, and I'm going to keep on walking. And so his companion just keeps on going through, and Singh says, no, I can't do that. I'm going to help this guy. Even though it's going to cost me, I'm going to help this guy as best I can. So Singh leans down, and you can imagine this walking. And if you've ever walked through snow and ice, and if you guys did anything like that when you were there, you know what it's like. I've walked through snow up to here, and you kind of go, boof, and your foot goes. It's hard yakka. And anyway, what he does, he lifts this guy on the back of his shoulder, and he's walking through the snow. Now, when no matter how cold it is out there, if you're exerting yourself with body strength, the heat of your body warms you up. You know that. And the heat of Singh's body warms this guy up. And after a while, they're walking along, because he's reviving, arm in arm. And as they're walking along, arm in arm, have a guess who they come across? The companion. The guy who said, I might lose my own convenience in my own life. I need to get out of here. I'm not going to care for that guy. I'm going to go on and do my own thing. And they found this other companion frozen dead in the snow and the ice and the cold. In the case of Sadar Sundar Singh, he was willing to lose his life on behalf of another. And in the process, he found it. In the case of the uncaring companion, he sought to save his own life, selfishness, and in the process, he lost it. I tell you, not caring is more costly than caring. Jesus had something else to say about this very, very thing. In Matthew 25, verse 31 to 47, it says these words, the words of Jesus. When the Son of Man comes in all his glory, and the angels will be gathered before him, and he sits on his glorious throne, all the nations will be gathered in his presence, and he'll separate people as a shepherd separates sheep and goats. He'll place the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the creation of the world. For I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty and you gave me a drink. I was a stranger and you invited me into your house. I was naked and you gave me some clothes. I was sick and you cared for me. I was in prison and you came and you visited me. And then the righteous ones will reply, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When a stranger and show hospitality, or naked and give you clothing? When did we see you sick and in prison and go and visit you? And then he says this, and then the king will reply, I tell you the truth. Here it is. Whatever you did. Action. Compassion. Whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters, you did it for me. Get it? You did it for me. And then the king will say to those on his left, away from me, you who are cursed, into eternal fire, prepare for the devil and his demons, for I was hungry, you didn't feed me. I was thirsty, you didn't give me a drink. I was a stranger, you didn't invite me into your home. I was naked, and you didn't give me clothing. I was sick and in prison, and you did not visit me. And they'll say the same thing. But Lord, when did we see you hungry, thirsty, a stranger, naked, sick, in prison, and did not help you? And he will answer them, I tell you the truth. When you refuse to help, no action, no compassion, no wonder of compassion at all. When you refuse to help the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you refuse to help me. And they will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. See, remember the priest and the temple attendant? They were afraid of losing their time, their income, their convenience, their comfort. But what they may have lost is their soul. See, Christianity is all about compassion. The wonder of the compassion of Jesus, obviously. And caring. It's about caring. It's about selflessness. And those things cost us. But not having those things could even cost us more. You know, when we stand before Jesus one day, and I'll put it in a personal context and you can relate it to yourself, and there's nothing wrong with any of these things in the right context, okay? I need to say that. But if I'm standing before Jesus, and we all will one day, I don't think he's going to say, "Hey, Mark, what kind of car did you drive?" But he might say, "Did you help the helpless?" I don't think he'd say, "Mark, what kind of clothes did you wear?" But he might say, "Mark, whom did you help in clothe?" I don't think he'd say, "Hey, tell me the fancy restaurants you ate at." But he might say, "Did you feed the hungry?" I don't think he's going to say, "Did you get promoted at work?" But he might say, "Whom did you promote in life?" I don't think he's going to say, "Mark, what kind of house did you live in?" But he might say, "Did you love your neighbour?" I don't think he's going to say, "Come on, tell me how much money you made." But he might say, "How much money did you give?" I don't think he's going to say, "How much money I saved up?" But he might ask me, "How many people were you helping in the process to get saved?" And there's nothing wrong with any of that list, okay? Hear me on that. In the right priority. But when those things take priority over the wonder of compassion, that's a slight problem. Erwin W. Tozer said this one time. He said, "Christianity demands a level of caring that transcends human inclination. It's costly to love the world and to care and to have compassion." The Apostle Paul writes this to the church at Corinth in Corinthians chapter 3, verse 12, and he says this, "Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved," he says this with a bunch of, there's a list of them, but he says this, "clothe yourself with" what? Compassion. Clothe yourself with compassion. Here's the deal as I wrap this up. Pharaoh's daughter, the princess, didn't even know she was going to be used to trigger the events that led to a whole nation getting saved out of slavery. She just cared for a lost child. Your compassion and my compassion today will make a difference for someone. Compassion is costly. Compassion moves us. And today, as we've had, and you've been incredibly generous as a church, we've had those Christmas cards where we can buy things for, like you can buy a chicken, I think, for $5, I think it is. And you can, you know, here's one here, clean water for someone for $50. And you can actually buy soap for $5 for someone. Stop malaria for $10. You can actually go there at the back, and we've actually ordered more cards because you've been so amazing. Thank you. And this money, these cards, they're like Christmas cards. You can get them and you can give them to people and say, "You know what? I'm going to give you this as a gift at Christmas with other stuff if you want to. But you know what? I bought a chicken for someone in another country who's desperate.